providers in the Tri-County area, including Portland and the major suburbs. All of the facilities, the sample was composed of facilities that were licensed by the state of Oregon. And the survey received the endorsement of the health department or behavioral health department of all three counties in order to try and encourage provider participation. Okay, thank you. Yay, we're up and running. Okay, briefly, the survey instrument covered program policies and procedures, practices, personnel policies, training and education, community outreach, etc. I also looked at barriers to implementing the practices. Briefly, at both addictions and mental health, providers participated. One note is that the response rates were much higher in the Portland metro area. Suburban counties were much less likely to reply. Again, not too surprising. Small, medium, and large agencies were all represented, and adolescent and adult providers were all represented. So the results, 90% felt that their agency's environment was supportive of LGBTQ cultural competency. So this is, I think I forgot to say at the beginning that the sponsor for the study was the Q Center with Portland's community center, who hopes to use these results in order to advocate for cultural competency practices. So it's great to know they're already on board. 22% said they had specialized programming aimed at LGBTQ clients, and that was a real surprise to us. I'll come back to this point later. Those of us who on the little advisory board I convened were aware of a handful who had specialized programming, but many of those, if they are doing any type of specialized programming, they certainly aren't announcing in the community. We certainly had no awareness, even among other providers who specialize in working with HIV-positive or LGBTQ clients, had no awareness that they had specialized programming. So that was an issue. I'm going to flip through these tables very quickly since you have handouts. In the area of program policies and procedures, we saw pretty good, people were doing quite a bit in the area of policies, harassment, discrimination policies. You'll see it starts to get a little bit lower toward the bottom. Serving the LGBTQ community was referenced in any of their service literature and made any reference to the community was quite a bit lower. So again, that kind of public acknowledgement of the community was lower. Program practices, again, very strong in stating that their agencies were using supportive practices around domestic partners of clients, intake paperwork using inclusive language. Then toward the bottom, we have whether or not their assessment tools designate sexual orientation. About 55%, so a lot of room to grow there. And intake paperwork allowing gender identity other than male or female was only 28%, so quite a little bit of room to work there. Program practices, the low one here is posters, magazines, brochures, etc., any type of public identification in their waiting rooms, waiting areas, or within the facility that would let an LGBTQ client know that it was a gay-friendly atmosphere. Personnel policies were fairly strong here, with the exception of active recruitment of LGBTQ staff. Training and education, to point out, about 56% had provided some kind of training around LGB issues, but only 27% around transgender issues. Okay, and community outreach, again, here's the area where there were fewer, fewer had taken steps to improve access by reaching out to the community or doing things in a public way that might engage or improve access of LGBTQ clients. Use of resources, pretty low awareness of the guidelines. Barriers. We asked what they expected would be some of the barriers to implementing any of these practices. And the primary barrier was small numbers of LGBTQ clients served. And the question I would come back to many of the agencies with is if you're not collecting information about who you're serving, then how do you know exactly what the numbers are within your client population? So that's one issue. And the other barrier was lack of time and resources to make changes. Lots of interest in doing things, though. That's great. Okay. Some of the significant differences I found between adolescent and adult agencies. Again, I have a primary interest in adolescent agencies. We know that adolescents are at increased risk. Adolescent agencies were less likely than adult agencies to ask about sexual orientation. Only 38%, as opposed to 81%, were asking about sexual orientation. So this was a really critical difference between adolescent and adult agencies, and that fit what I was finding anecdotally in talking to adolescent providers about their fears around asking about sexual orientation. Okay. They were more likely to have actually recruited professionals to train their staff, however. And I skipped through, looked at differences by size, differences by license type. Addictions agencies were not quite as far along as mental health agencies, in summary. Okay, key findings. Most have implemented practices around or policies, discrimination and harassment policies, practices for domestic partner inclusion. So those were positive signs. On the other hand, most agencies had not openly identified themselves as gay-friendly. There were still quite a few agencies who hadn't had any type of staff training, and most had not used the guidelines around cultural competency. And there were fewer implemented practices around transgender clients. There was high interest, so that's a good thing, and again, primary barriers were low numbers and lack of time. Okay. Let's see. Let me skip forward here. So, finally, I wanted to back up to that last one. Some of the agencies that were most concerned with adolescent serving agencies, and my next step, I really want to do sort of a qualitative analysis of adolescent serving agencies and what some of their reasons are, what the barriers are, in order to start address. Anecdotally, again, Randall covered all of the key areas or the key questions. Sorry, the key questions that were the types of questions that they've come up with. A lot of them ask about relevance to treatment. A lot of them ask about fears around that the youth will close down or cut off the interview. That the youth will flee from treatment if they're asked about sexual orientation. This is an important one because all of the adolescent agencies I worked with are participating in a larger federal data set. So right now, the Center for Substance Abuse Treatment has an enormous data set of adolescent treatment providers. They're all sending data, and right now, the agencies are required to ask sexual behavior questions that include gender of partner. So we do have that data, but the questions about identity is optional. And we actually just got the survey to include both identity and attraction, but very few agencies are actually using those questions. So that's a next step of advocacy, is trying to get them to use that, to use all three, preferably. Okay, other recommendations. Support and advocacy for agencies to visibly identify themselves as gay-friendly. Agencies said in the comments, you know, they said that, well, if we knew where to find posters or materials or brochures, we might put them out, but we don't know where to find them. Expansion of the trainer pool. Many agencies said, well, where do we find trainers to train our staff? How do we find people with expertise in treatment for transgender clients? So trying to get that information as well. Encouragement to agencies to complete the survey as a self-assessment tool. Identification of funding sources for trainings. Some of you, if you're working in the area of alcohol, tobacco, and other drugs, you might know that CSAT came out, and the ATTC Network, Addiction Technology Transfer Network, came out with a curriculum recently for substance abuse providers. So there is now a curriculum that could be used to train staff and to train agencies as well. This just came out within the last couple months, so we're hoping that it doesn't just sit on a lot of people's desks at the state. So we're hoping that all of those working in the field of addictions contact their state, single state agencies, that contact their ATTC network and say, okay, how are you going to get this out to us? How can you get this into the field? Are you going to make this training available for free, preferably, or low cost? So that this resource is available, we want to make sure it gets into the field. And then finally, advocacy and training for adolescent agencies in documentation of sexual orientation. One of their primary concerns, again, was around confidentiality, because families are brought into treatment. How do they protect that information once they have collected it? Was another primary concern that we need to address. Limitations of the study. This study did not include agencies not licensed by the state, private mental health practitioners. LGBT-friendly agencies might have been more likely to respond. we have some suggestion of that, given that the suburban counties were less likely to respond than the Metro Portland. So it's already a biased sample.